Elissa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
Okay, we are so glad you're with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker Campbell, and we are getting ready to completely shift gears. We're going to hit on a brand new book that has just been released that goes hand in hand with our college football conversation. And why not? The Crimson Tide are ranked number one in the preseason. And in our book review, we are going to discuss the rich Alabama football tradition. This book provides wonderful insight on Joe Namath, Coach Paul Bear Bryant, and I think most importantly, a historical perspective on the civil rights movement era. And so it is a true pleasure to welcome in Ed Krasminski, the author of his new book, and he collaborated with Randy Roberts on that. It is titled Rising Tide, Bear Bryant, Joe Namath, and Dixie's Last Quarter. Welcome in, Ed.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on, and it is perfect timing, as I mentioned, with the release of this book, because there is so much anticipation to the start of the college football season, of course, Alabama being ranked number one. And I just want to say, first and foremost, congratulations on this project, because you really do capture the early days and how it all began, it seems like, for Alabama's rich tradition. But I think the takeaway is much more, this is a book that's much more than just for a Crimson Tide fan or a college football fan. It is wide-ranging, correct?
Absolutely. The era in the South at this time, the civil rights movement was in its height, and Bear Bryant and George Wallace and Joe Namath coming together at this time really painted a divergent and interesting picture.
And tell us a little bit about as far as the feedback that you're receiving. I mean, were you and Randy Roberts, have you been able to achieve your goal that you set out to? I mean, when you're chronicling something of this nature, I mean, you are talking about two of the game's biggest heroes, but there was a greater message that I think that you were trying to have come across.
Yeah, I think what we were really trying to do was present the idea that Bear Bryant isn't just the Bear Bryant that you see or remember as that iconic figure upon his retirement. And Joe Namath isn't the Broadway Joe. Many people look at Joe Namath as being Broadway Joe waiting to happen. Well, this is a very independent era for both of these guys, and the story has never really been fleshed out, and we were really glad to be the ones to do it.
I have to tell you, Ed, that I really found kind of compelling is talking about Joe Namath and, of course, you know, his history, how he helped transform Alabama football, bringing it to the forefront. But what I found interesting is the recruiting of Joe. And you know, he actually chose Maryland, but Tuscaloosa wasn't even on his radar. And then it was Howard Schnellenberger that went up there, and he closed the deal, and he even wrote some hot checks, right?
Absolutely. Howard Schnellenberger had played football with Joe's brother Frank at Kentucky.
At Kentucky, yeah.
And he went up to pick up Joe and thought it was going to be, you know, basically driving to the door, picking him up, taking him back to the airport. And he found himself in the middle of negotiations with no money, one set of clothes, and finally closes the deal when Joe's mother agrees that he should go down to Alabama and play. And Howard has no money, smells like an old shoe, passing bad checks, most dramatically in Atlanta, where there are no Alabama fans at this time, and he felt like if he couldn't get out of Alabama, he was never going to get out of Alabama.
Well, you even said in the book, too, Ed, that he didn't look like an Alabama player. He looked like a pool hustler.
He did. He looked like a pool hustler, and more important than that, after he, his initial visit, he's ethnic. If you look at a picture of the Alabama football team at this time, my gosh, you can't even tell them apart. Crew cuts, button-down shirts, and here comes Namath with his floppy hair and his darker skin, not dark skin, but darker than Alabama's prepared for, and looks a little bit like, if you like him, like a Magyar prince, and if you don't like him, a dirty gypsy. And trust me, both opinions emerged.
Well, what was Coach Bryant's initial impression when he saw and had the opportunity to meet Joe?
Well, when Coach Bryant signed Joe, he knew he had something special. A kid from the North doesn't always come to the South, but Coach Bryant always was particularly fond of Pennsylvanians. George Blanda and Babe Parilli both played for Coach Bryant. They were both from Western Pennsylvania, so the idea of getting an even better version was great. He knew, however, that the people at Alabama might not immediately accept him, especially since he was coming late, and especially since he was coming from the North. So Coach Bryant invites Joe Namath into this tower that he had built alongside the practice field, and you could have heard a pin drop. Nobody ever went up the tower. Nobody even set foot on it. Even
sacred ground.
More practices.
Yeah.
And this kid, who's dressed, as I said, like a pool hustler, comes into the practice late, gets invited up there, and all of the players immediately know, okay, something's going on here, and we better get on board because this is not just a regular late recruit.
So how did Joe Namath, how did Coach Bryant, how did they change the meaning of football? And because you really captured this in the book, that it was a nation right now that was in transition and they were really struggling.
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, Coach Bryant, I think, really defined what we consider to be the modern football coach. Getting players to buy into his system, getting players to be more disciplined than their opponents, getting players, as Coach Bryant used to like to say, to out-mean their opponents. And I think that this has been what everybody is seeking ever since then. The other thing that they did at this time that really changed college football was to bring the idea of it as a national game. We take for granted today that no matter where we live, we expect to see the best game every Saturday. And the 65 Orange Bowl is really what opened this up. NBC broadcasted in prime time in living color to 25 million viewers, which was an enormous number at the time. And it was Alabama against Texas, but they had huge numbers in the Pacific Northwest, in Minnesota, in Pennsylvania. And I think that really, more than anything, was the first national game, the first big game. Joe comes in and in defeat becomes the hero, and in many ways really changes the entire structure of college football and how we as a nation look upon it.
And I know you've had a chance to spend time with Joe Namath. Did he ever share his feelings about how much the game has evolved and how much it has changed?
Oh, absolutely. I think Joe is...
What does he say?
Just amazed sometimes when he goes to Alabama to visit now, and he's still a huge Alabama fan and a very big part of their program, and he thinks back to, you know, the when he was there, you know, immediately between one of his years, he went from not being allowed to drink any water and taking salt pills because it was thought water was bad for you when you were sweating too much.
Can you imagine?
Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And something like that. I mean, we take for granted that these kids are given the best medical treatment and the best approach. And at the time, you know, really was kind of a small-time affair, even at a place like Alabama.
Well, the reviews are in. The Rising Tide, as they say, it's an electrifying book that it hits on all four cylinders. And you definitely want to go out and get a copy of it, of course, titled Rising Tide, Bear Bryant, Joe Namath, and Dixie's Last Quarter. It's been such a pleasure and honor to visit with you, Ed, and we will definitely open invitation. We definitely want you back, okay?
Oh, anytime you want, I would love to be back.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more with our college football conversation continues here in just a moment with Jason Peter.
The work of FCA can be summed up in four words: coaches, campus, camp, and community. The four C's are vital in fulfilling FCA's vision of seeing the world impacted for Jesus Christ through the influence of athletes and coaches.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
And we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. And before we get underway, we want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. We love hearing from you at info@eradiosports.com. And in our final segment that is brought to you by our good friends at Mercer Well Service, it's time to go one-on-one with our dear friend of the program, Jason Peter, with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. We've been talking a lot, Jason, about college football. Here in just a moment, I want to get your take on the NFL. They've been doling out fines for the first week of preseason action, but some things that are kind of taking place at Nebraska. Let's head there and kind of fill us in on some of the things that have been happening within the program. I understand that former players are not allowed to attend practice. This is unusual.
Yeah, it was news to me. I mean, I opened my email inbox and there was a email from the school saying that Bo has decided to close down practice access to all former players. So I think panic has set in down at Memorial Stadium and with this staff and especially this head coach, because I think he realizes that he needs to get it done this year. You know, maybe winning 9 or even 10 games and having a few bad losses throughout that year is not going to cut it. It's just not going to cut it anymore. There's a big time, I wouldn't say big time, but a donor who gives in the range of $2.5 million a year had come out and said that what he's done up to this point isn't really cutting it, and we kind of are expecting bigger things this year. And really, there's no excuse. I mean, when you look at the schedule that Nebraska has, it's there for the taking. I think people just would like to see, there's usually 2-3 games each year that it just gets out of hand. And that's, guys just not having concentration, lack of focus, whatever it may be. But you should never get blown out by 30, 40 points. But, yeah, so that's the big news, I guess, is us former players aren't allowed down there. He felt like there was a player or two that had been attending maybe a practice here and there and felt like maybe he was leaking something. I don't know who he would have been leaking it to. I didn't hear anything. And I feel like I'm pretty tied into kind of the Nebraska media, and nothing came about that, they were going to run Taylor Martinez at wide receiver, or Amir Abdullah was going to take snaps behind center. I mean, there was nothing that really came out. I just think he realizes that he's got to win. The schedule's there. But he also realizes he's got a very young team on defense, especially. So, it will be an interesting season, to say the least.
Well, the schedule, of course, they open up August 31st at home against Wyoming, and you start looking at Bo Pelini, and last year 10-4, it's his sixth season right there in Lincoln. Obviously, he is tightening the screws, closing down practice. What message, though, you're always thinking about, alumni, that's family. What message does that send to the family?
Yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, because that's what we've always prided ourselves on so much up here at Nebraska is, the bond that us as former players that we shared, the support for the program. I think sometimes he doesn't really grasp, I think, when a player or a former player comes out and says, not acceptable to lose by 30 points in a conference championship game on national television. And if he disagrees with that, then there's something wrong with him. And, we only want what's best for them. And, maybe it's a different style of coaching, which to me, it doesn't seem like Bo isn't one for tough love. He seems very demanding, which us as former players, that's kind of the same avenue that we're taking here with, the way that we feel about the program. We demand there's a certain level of effort. We demand that, there's a standard that's in place. And if you don't, if you can't match up to that standard, then somebody else needs to be in there doing it. And it seems like that's the same type of personality that Bo Pelini has, but he just doesn't like anybody else saying it. And, this was a big problem with Bill Callahan, was that constant reminder of what he hasn't done or hadn't done or accomplished, following. Obviously, Frank Solich was in between Tom Osborne and Bill Callahan, but Tom Osborne is certainly is his name's on the field, and he's certainly a presence around this area. So, the reminder of him was always there for Bill Callahan, and for some, it's just, the egos on these guys nowadays, they just, they think they're the cat's meow and that they invented the game of football, and God forbid anybody should say that there was a pretty darn good coach that came before me. A lot of these guys can't walk in another man's shadow, and I think that's one of the criticisms of Bo is nobody can say anything without him you know, jumping down your throat, or it seems at times like, you know, he threatens some of the media, and he cuts off access to the media at times. And it's funny because you have guys around here that they just they kind of, their tail goes in between their legs, and they're like, okay, Bo, whatever you say, and, you know, they're on their way. It's an odd thing, but you know, the guys that certainly he's banning from practice, you know, they're not gonna take that mentality. If you know, he has a problem with them, they're not gonna turn around and run the other way. You know, they've kind of given the whole blood, sweat, and tears for this program, and they've been successful. And you know, people don't have to listen if a former player talks, but they feel like you know, they've got the right to do so.
Okay, so let's quickly, we got to shift avenues, and let's talk about the NFL. I was talking about they've handed out a lot of fines for some of the preseason action. What's your take on this as a former NFL player?
Alyssa, these fines that the NFL has been handing out in these first few weeks, when you have current players that are criticizing some of these calls that have been going on, I think you realize that There's a problem here, and the NFL's almost at like a crossroads here. You look at the hit that the rookie linebacker out of Chicago, John Bostic, the one that he put on the Chargers receiver. That, to me, was textbook. That's the way that you teach it as, you know, a Pop Warner coach or a high school coach. That's what you want to see out of your players, and he gets fined $21,000. Well, then you go to the Miami-Houston game where you had DJ Swearinger, who hit Dustin Keller, and he hit him low. Why? Because he didn't want to hit him up high, because, you know, these guys are thinking, if I go up high, well, maybe there's a fine waiting for me then by the league on Monday morning. And so he hits Dustin Keller down low and blows his knee out. And it's severe enough where you just don't know how a guy will come back. And I think that's what the NFL is saying now, is that we'll deal with blown out and tore up knees rather than have to deal with this concussion thing. And obviously, you know, with the lawsuit that the former players have brought against the NFL, you know, you can see kind of why they're doing what they're doing. But I don't know if people will continue to sit in those stands if they keep handing out fines for hits that John Bostic put out on the Wiley kid the other night. I don't agree with it, and current players don't agree with it. But then, you know, you have the Antonio Smith, and Houston seems to be involved in these, but with Richie Incognito, who was a former Nebraska guy, he got kind of tossed here, though, from here after a year or two. But, you know, that was pretty blatant. And I'm sure Richie Incognito was saying something or pinching him or grabbing his face or raking his eyes or doing something probably that deserved getting hit in the head with a helmet, but you just can't do it.
We've got to step aside. Jason, you provided some great stuff. We look forward to catching up with you next week. And, of course, we look forward to the month of September as the Big E Show. It is going to be going coast to coast, and we're going to share all the details in the upcoming weeks. So, Jason, we'll talk to you next week, all right?
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.